The tape stop, we were talking about Breslin Center and the formation, and you mentioned on how initially the board had thought of a different location for the sports facility. Mm-hmm. And would you talk a little bit more about that student, the student protest to the idea of it there, or where it was located?
Yeah, it's going to be located over where the football practice field is now, right behind the where the Duffy Doherty building is. And I think it would have seated something like 18,000 and had some other things hooked to it. And I think at the time the total project would have been like about $11 million. But the students on the committee at the time were against it, not because we didn't need it, but they felt that there was a number of other pressing needs that should have been ahead of that. And so we put it on hold.
So, and so students were involved in that committee,
right,
in that decision.
Right, uh-huh. Yes, they were. Yeah. And most of our projects at the time, we tried to get a campus-wide consensus on things. We didn't want to push anything without support.
In the 1970s, under Dr. Horton, was that a difficult time to get things built, or because of the economy? I know, obviously, under President Hanna, there had been such a tremendous expansion.
Yeah, right.
I wondered if that was a time of where it was harder to get money for building, or?
I don't think it's so much harder, but we had decided, at least this board or the boards that I was on, that we would try to get campus-wide support for projects.
Okay.
As opposed to what I think happened earlier, if we needed it, they would just build it. But sometimes that, not often, but every now and then you'd run into a situation where the campus, most of the people, students and whatnot, would feel that there was other things that were more pressing.
So besides the Breslin Center, or what became the Breslin Center, were there any other major building projects that you were involved in? Was, for example, in the Horton Center, was there a push under President Horton, even obviously not to name it after himself, but...
President Horton was one of the prime movers in the idea of building the Performing Arts Center, and at the time he had come up with a proposal that would have required little or no state support and little or no support from the board. Matter of fact, the original thought was to have it mostly from gifts and from big donors and stuff like that. But as it went along and got kind of far along in the process, it became aware that we were going to need some state funds. And some of the board members started to balk. But we were able to pull it off anyway. But it turned out to be the financing turned out to be a little differently than what we had originally planned.
Mm-hmm. The endowment of the university was obviously very low at that time.
Yes,
you know. Was there any attempt to change that during your tenure on the board? Or
yes, in fact, we created a new position for endowments. I can't remember what the name of it was. Somebody was in charge of
some type of development fund.
Development fund, right? Okay. Then we had a development committee or something, because two board members used to serve on it. I served on it for a while.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember the name of it. But our gift giving and endowments and all those kinds of things took quite a jump, I think, during Dr. Wharton's time.
Okay. The decision, anything else about Dr. Wharton's tenure as president that you recall or as a board member? Were you surprised when you heard he was leaving, or?
No, because I think he had indicated that if he could stay around anywhere from 6 to 10 years, that would probably be as long as he wanted to stay. So it was not a big surprise when he decided to leave. Mm-hmm. Kind of saddened.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But, yeah. Matter of fact, I was really surprised that he lasted as long as he did, because someone of his caliber, everybody's taking a look at him. Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of people that were offering jobs elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He served on a number of different boards when he came here, and he decided to drop all of them except those that he thought would help the university.
I see.
That's 30 some boards or wow. something. He ended up staying on maybe 8 or 10 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dr. Hardin obviously replaced in terms of interim. What were your
It was, everybody around here knew him, and he'd been around for a while because he was head of Kellogg. He ran Kellogg Center for a while when I was a student.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a popular fella, and he was a very easy choice for interim,
mm-hmm.
and did a very good job during that period. He kind of kept things together. He was an interesting fella.
Were there any issues under his short interim that you remember?
Not that I can remember. Mm-hmm. No. It seemed like that was kind of a quiet period.
Mm-hmm. And then his replacement, of course, was Cecil Mackey. How were you involved, or were you involved, or the board involved in his hiring?
Yes, we were. We had a campus-wide committee again like we did before. Like 21 people, something like that, including two trustees, I think, served on the committee. This process took a long time. It took a lot longer than we thought, because we were like 2 years into trying to get a president, and we were getting nowhere. I think we were back to ground zero at the end of 2 years. Mm. Cecil Mackey was one of the early people considered by the committee, but he had indicated that he wasn't interested. But Warren Huff knew him from somewhere. Warren Huff was on the board at the time. So we were getting a lot of pressure from somewhere to get this job done. So Warren said, well, if you'd like, maybe I can get Cecil Mackey to reconsider. So I said, well, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So he did, and because he was, at the time, if I remember rightly, he was one of four people we considered maybe a year before we came back to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he was well thought of by the committee. Mm-hmm. And so he talked to him, and he reconsidered, and we ended up hiring him.
And when he first came, there was obviously the Michigan was experiencing a lot of economic problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
facing tough issues.
Did you find working in cooperation with him, or were you at loggerheads with him, or?
We worked in cooperation with him for the most part. We had to cut back some things. There was moves foot to cut some programs. I remember the College of Nursing was one of those that was planned to be cut, and man, they had some support like you wouldn't believe. Every program that we thought about cutting had some great support.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up, seemed like we may have eliminated a few programs, like two or three or something, but not nearly as bad as it seemed at first. I think the thought was to get rid of three or four schools, I remember we had the College of Lyman Briggs.
Lyman Briggs. Okay. University College, there was.
Yeah, I think, and we may have done away with University College. Yeah. Okay. a Lyman Briggs, we changed it from a college and to a pro. Matter of fact, at a board meeting, Charlie Scarborough, who was head of Lyman Briggs at the time, was at the meeting. And so I was talking with Charlie and some of the other people, you know, they felt that we should try to save it. So I was doing what I could to try to save it, but it looked like it was going down. So I talked to Charlie at the meeting, and I said, what if we tried to save it as a school or something? He said, well, that'll work. Mm-hmm. And we got the votes for that, so we did keep it as mm-hmm. I don't know what it is now. It may still be a school. Mm-hmm. But there was a...
Had you taken courses in Lyman Briggs?
No. It wasn't around when I was in school. Okay. Some of those programs like James Madison, Lyman Briggs, and I think there's one other, isn't it? They were new programs.
So when the discussions of dropping programs like nursing and mm-hmm. Lyman Briggs and something else, were you lobbied directly by these constituents or by alums or
everybody? Directly everybody. Yeah, bags full of mail.
Is that right?
Oh, it was man. Mm-hmm. And nursing has quite a lot of folks. But
did the medical schools or even discussions of a law school come up at that time?
Yeah, even discussion of a dental school.
Dental school?
Yeah, at the time when a lot of the unions started to have dental coverage for their workers, there was the thought that there would hardly be enough dentists. Mm-hmm. So we talked with the people from the Dental Society about a dental school, but that didn't get very far.
Mm-hmm. Was that a UAW initiative or was it especially? Or?
I think Dr. Wharton may have been the prime mover of that, because I remember we had a discussion with whoever was head of the Michigan Dental Association. I forgot his name. I can't remember who else, but the law school was discussed. Of course, the medical school, that was one of the things shortly after I got on the board that started to move. And when we took on the osteopathic school, that was kind of I can't remember the time frame of that, but that was a big year. At one time we were going to build a teaching hospital,
uh-huh.
but that didn't get very far.
In one of our previous interviews, Dr. Cantlin indicated that he was opposed to that idea.
Is that right? Yeah.
The idea of the teaching hospital.
Yeah, right.
He wanted a different model, different plan.
Yeah.
Did the other people on the board look to you as a medical professional, even though you weren't a doctor? Medical doctor, you were a dentist. Yeah. But did they look to you for any special advice on this? Or
no. Yeah. I don't know why. Could have been helpful. No.
Any other things that memorable about Dr. Mackey's in your few last
well,
tenure?
The thing I remember about Dr. Mackey, he was a great guy. You know, he was a good manager, I think. But for some reason, alumni didn't hit it off with the alumni, and I don't know why. But he had to make some real tough decisions, which doesn't make for popularity, you know, like when you talk about cutting these schools and all these things, you're talking about stepping on the toes of a lot of important alumni who thought they were important. Mm-hmm. He just wasn't very popular. And I was kind of unfortunate because I tell you, he did a job that we had asked him to do, mm-hmm. you know.
So the board recommended some of the cuts and then he implemented them?
Or he would suggest to us, this is what he would do to take care of the problem, and we more or less went along with it. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of unhappy alumni and friends.
That was a time of difficulty in the Alumni Association, the official connection with the university.
Right.
How did the board get involved in that? Do you remember it all? Were they involved?
I remember when Jack Kinney was head of the Alumni Association. Now, Another issue, I guess, was this issue of the state news, which we ended up settling early on. The state news wanted to be independent, and there was some people who didn't want them to be independent, and we ended up giving them their independence. But it seemed like there was something similar to that with the Alumni Association. The Alumni Association is still connected with the university, isn't it? Okay. But there was a, I think there was a move afoot by Jack Kennedy. Jack Kenny was head of the Alumni Association to make it an independent organization. And it didn't get very far. And I think Jack ended up leaving here. I don't know whether it was because of that or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But that was, I don't remember all what went on, but that was kind of a hot issue at the time.
Okay.
Because there was a lot of support for whatever Jack was proposing, mm-hmm. at least from the outside, but I don't think it got very far with mm-hmm. the board.
Well, on the board itself, were you ever chair?
Yes, I was chair.
Okay, from what years were those?
From 74 to 76.
Okay.
Yeah.
So those were toward Dr. Horton's last years.
Right, yeah. My last 2 years of my first term.
Mm-hmm. The end of, you talk a little bit about at the time you ended being a trustee, what were those circumstances? You served for 16 years.
Yeah, 16 years, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had enough, but a lot of people who supported me and friends and all thought I should give it another whirl. And in those days, there were two people you had to get their support or you could forget it. And that was the governor, who was Jim Blanchard at the time, and the fellow who was head of AFL-CIO, who was Sam Fishman. He passed away that years later. But so they, so these people said, well, why don't you give, we know we need you, you know, so I let him talk me into trying again. So the first thing you got to go do is to check with these two people. So I went to see Sam Fishman first, you know, and I said, Sam, I'm thinking about running again. He said, oh, that's nice. I said, well, can I get your support? I said, well, you know, I wasn't too happy about the way you guys, I think at the time we were giving Dr. Mackey a lot of flack or something about something, and there's something going on. Right then and there, I knew I had no chance. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, okay, thank you, and I left. And so I told the people who pushed me, I said, hey, I got no chance, man. You know, Sam didn't you know, he didn't go for it. I said, well, what about the governor? I said, well, I know he's, I forgot what he was, oh, I know what it was. It was something to do with something we were doing, and word came down by another fellow board member that the governor said, if you didn't go for this, and I can't remember exactly what it was, that this would be your last term in the board. I said, well, let me tell the governor, some of us can't last forever. You know, when I ran for the board, I was not a politician. I had never really been in politics. Mm-hmm. The only reason I ran was because they told me that maybe I could be helpful to the university. My allegiance was to the university because, mm-hmm. you know, they threatened me to do it. You know, what the heck can they do to me? You know? As long as they don't stand in front of my door and chase my faces away. But anyway, so I knew that there was no sense in talking to him. So I told these people that I said, well, I'll give it a whirl anyway. Maybe they'll select you anyhow. I said, well, okay, this is deference to them. I'll go to the convention. In the meantime, I was getting some weird phone calls.
Oh, really?
Oh, God. They're the dinky little board positions you wouldn't think.
Raising cockroaches. Yeah.
A good friend of mine, who I thought was a good friend, calls me and says, and then they had picked another black candidate to take my place, mm-hmm. who was an attorney brother of mine. You know, we went to school together. You know, so I don't, maybe that wasn't any connection, but so one friend calls me and he said, well, you know, I forget, Chuck Benson. He was a physician in Detroit, OBGYN. So he's running. I said, oh, that's nice. So we think you ought to drop out. I said, well, why? You know, run. Anybody can run. All I can do is, you know, get on the ticket. So He said, well, while they were prepared to say that you were doing something wrong, I said, all right, they're prepared to say you would, you know, just threatening me with all this. I'll tell them to do whatever they want to do. I'll be there. Mm-hmm. You know, I ain't got nothing on me. You know, it's an old political thing. You throw out some stuff, just rattle a tree and see if something will fall off.
Yeah, that's right.
So I went down there, and strangely enough, this was an interesting convention because a guy who was on the U of M board, Jerry Dunn, because Jerry had been a rep, you know, and he'd been around for years, but he got into trouble he worked for the Ann Arbor School District or something, and he ended up having to get into some serious negotiations or something with a union or something, so he got on the wrong side of the unions. Mm-hmm. So he and I were the stars of the show that year. They could get rid of us, boy. So, and Jerry thought he could beat him. You know, he'd been around, he had connections. So I remember talking to him. I said, and as you go around talking to people, you know, you could tell some of your best friends would, oh, get away from me, I'm going to lose my job.
Not good friends anymore.
Right, no. So I said, Jerry, why don't we drop out? He said, oh, you can drop out. I'm not going to drop out. I can beat the suckers. I said, you can't beat them, man. Yeah, I can beat them. So and late in the convention, and when it's getting close to the vote, you know, I dropped out and I got my little speech. Mm-hmm. And I told my buddy good luck, and took my place, you know. And so Jerry, he went to the vote, killed him. And the poor guy, he was in tears. Mm. I told you, you can't beat him.
You had a better political sense.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
When those two guys spoke, that's the way it was, yeah. You know. Yeah. And, well, you know, and I did have Coleman Young on my side, but, you know, Coleman had some power, but not that much. but I'll never forget that. That poor guy, they beat him into the ground.
Mm. And then in that election, was Charlie Vinson elected?
No, they lost. they got beat anyway. So they did us a favor.
No. Was Charlie Vinson an MSU alum?
Yeah, he was.
So at least they had that criteria.
So, in those days, they did things like try to balance the ticket. You try to get so many minorities and women, and you got to kind of balance it out. So they thought if they got rid of me, they had to find at least another black candidate to balance the ticket. Mm-hmm. So they got Charlie.
And the board shifted then? The Republicans?
Yeah, right. Republicans, I think they went 5-3 then.
Mm-hmm. In 86 then?
This was
84. Okay. And then, now, were you on the board when Mackey resigned?
Or yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you were still on the board then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And then, had John DiBiagio come by the time you were there, or they hadn't hired him?
We hired. I was in.
You were still on the hiring.
Yeah. I was a prime mover for John because he was a teacher of mine when I was in dental school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Matter of fact, John was was one of the reasons. Oh, he helped me when I came back because in my last year of school, he and I were talking. We got to be good friends. You know, and he asked me where I was planning to practice. I said, I'm going back to East Lansing. He said, well, have you been up there looking around for any places? I said, no. He said, what are you doing Friday? I said, nothing. He said, we get in this car and we drove up here and we looked all around. We found the spot where I am right now.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And where's that? Where's your office?
East Lansing, right up here, across the street from the Union, upstairs.
Oh.
Over.
Okay.
Used to be Redwood and Ross below me. They moved out of there, uh-huh. But I'm right upstairs.
So you're right on Grand River.
Yeah, 33 years, right in the same spot. But we came up here and we looked around. We found that spot and looked at us. So, and I introduced him to Biggie and Duffy, and we had a great time. So when John left dental school and he started getting into education, I think he went down in Kentucky and someplace else and someplace else. And we were talking about candidates, and I mentioned his name and got him nominated. And matter of fact, I went to, where was that, in Connecticut somewhere. I went out there to talk to him to convince him to take the job. Because he really, you know, he had a pretty cushy deal. He only reported to the governor when he was at, was it Connecticut?
In Connecticut, yeah.
And he told me, he said, well, why would I want to go there with these These crazy people. all I got to do is call the governor once a month and tell her how I'm doing.
So that his Connecticut job was a government, it was government appointee?
So I said, man, we really needed help at the time. And I said, mm-hmm. Yeah, we need you.
So you'd had a long time relationship with him?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I didn't want the other board members to know, because at the time, there was at least two or three of my fellow Democrats who were not happy with me about something. Mm-hmm. And I knew if they knew I was, they didn't care who it was, he was done.
This is your candidate.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Right toward the end of your tenure, you were engineered that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that info came out much.
No, I hope not.
revealed now. No. Have you had contact with him at all?
I haven't talked to John since he left.
I see.
John was in my wedding. I got married again for the third time in 86.
86.
Yeah, and I had John, and Jack Brosnan was my best man. Walter Adams was in my wedding party. Lee Carr. We had a great time.
During your career at MSU, or since you came back to East Lansing, what local activities were you involved in, besides obviously your professional dentist work?
The local dental societies and stuff like that. I was in the Kiwanis for a little while. But I've always had so many kids that I had the time to do. Right now I got five kids under 13.
Well, funny how much of a drain they take on their back.
They play travel hockey, travel soccer.
Keep you young though.
Oh, wow. We put about 70,000 miles on a year on two vehicles.
Oh, no.
Couple fraternities, and I used to get with them, church, but nothing to speak of. I dropped out of Kiwanis years ago. Mm-hmm. They require you to show up every Monday. I can make it sometimes, but not often.
Yeah. Since you left the board, have you had any continuing university contact or been involved in any special programs, either athletics or academics, or has the university called you on you to do anything?
Every now and then somebody would call on me to speak to their class regarding some health issues or dental issues or something like that.
In the medical school, or is it a...
Medical school sometimes, or even in... seemed like I went over to Lyman Briggs or something once. Couple other things that I can't remember, but not lately. Maybe I got so old and just kind of forgot about me. Mm-hmm. But nothing special. Mm-hmm. And we used to get an invite. Matter of fact, they used to bring all the. Who did that? What's your name? Well, he was interim president.
Gordon
Guyer. Well, before Gordon, too, they used to bring us old guys back once a year for dinner. Old folks.
The former trustees.
Yeah. I think John DiBiagio did that. That must have died right after John. At one time, the president used to invite a former trustee back for a ball game. Mm-hmm. You know,
they don't do that anymore. Tickets are too hard to come back. Are you a season ticket holder now?
Yeah, they give us season tickets to basketball, football, and hockey. Mm-hmm. And I go to some of them, but my sons usually go. I got two sons who are 31, and they love to go.
So you kept up with the athletics.
Yeah.
This weekend, obviously, with the Final Four coming on.
I wish I could go down to that. Mm-hmm. But I can't make it. I did go Thursday night, though, when they played Syracuse down in Detroit here.
In Auburn.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The spirit was there.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. A little closer.
What interesting perspective in your from your experience as an athlete, as a professional professional man, also some great success in academics. What do you see today? Is the is there a balance that student athletes have to make, or what are some of the special problems that you see?
Well, the student athlete in my day, they would especially those that played on teams and intercollegiate teams, they would encourage them to take lighter loads during the season so they could keep up. But it requires a little extra effort to try to balance those two, because the athletics takes up a ton of time. You know, those coaches, they have nothing to do but play ball. But matter of fact, the coaches were very instrumental in my education. They would always encourage us to do, because you have to keep up a certain level. But it's not easy, but it's been done. So
I had Tico Duckett as a student.
And, is that right?
He was an excellent student. The only thing is, he missed few classes because of press conferences.
I see him over the Mac every now and then. Yeah. He's a good guy. Yeah.